If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Stardom Road Podcast here on the Countout Podcast Network. I'm your host, as always, Scott Edwards, and if you're over watching on YouTube, hello. If you're listening to your MP3s, whether it be via Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast, welcome to the show. If this is your first time, your second time, your third time, or you've been listening since the first episode, we thank you. And then, of course, with me, as always, is my good friend, my co-host, Trent. Trent, welcome back.
I'm going to shout out for the people who've been listening for like the 43rd time, the 47th time. I know you want to look after the early the people who've only just joined, but I'm thinking for the people who've been here from the beginning as well. I'm not sure what number
I to, but literally said, if you've been listening since the first episode.
Well, I thought you meant like this is your first episode.
No, maybe, like since the first episode.
I don't know. I wasn't listening to you. So
I could tell. This is episode 45 of the Stardom Road Podcast.
Maybe they've re-listened to episodes and they got to 40.
That's possible. That's possible. It's
and for also those of you who are bumping up our views with multiple listens, thank you.
It's also part 3 of the Queen's Quest series, talking today to Tommy Heinsohn's era, as well as kind of the end of Queen's Quest as we know it, / whatever Saya Kamatani's doing with it up until this day. But that will be
one man band.
yeah, unfortunately. But before we get there, Trent, how the hell are you?
I'm doing okay. We're not quite there yet, but we're getting prepared for a very, very busy season when it comes to Joshi tournament season. Obviously, the 5-star Grand Prix is going to be busier than ever because they've made it a bigger tournament than ever. And instead of going bigger as in longer, they've gone bigger as in shorter. And then, of course, you've got like TJPW, you've got Marigold, which is brand new. They've got a tournament coming up as well. The 5-star Grand Prix. The G1 tournament is happening. Not that I'm paying any attention to that because that's men, but that is also happening and some people care about men's wrestling. So it's the busy time of year for Japanese wrestling fans when it comes to tournaments. You just kind of got to ration yourself as best as you can. And it's very difficult because, like, apparently you're only allowed to run these kind of tournaments at one time of the year. There's no such thing as a round robin tournament, at least when it comes to like singles matches in winter or autumn or spring. It's got to be summer. It's the only time you're allowed to do them. That's the rules.
Yeah, Joshi doesn't separate them as much. I mean, technically, if we want to get technical, Marigolds will be in fall by the time it's over. But, you know, it's still summer for the most part. It starts in the summer. But it
is, if the sun goddess is involved, the sun will still be shining.
The sun will always be shining. The sun's always shining on Marigold. That's the world champion. Hashtag my world champion. But yeah, it is tournament season. Five-star Grand Prix right around the corner. Tokyo's Princess Cup's also starting very, very soon. And, of course, the Dream Star Grand Prix. Because there's just never enough. There is never enough. If you have been out of wrestling at all recently, if you've been trying to maybe take a break from wrestling recently, as I point to myself, there's no time.
It's a tactical retreat from wrestling, knowing that I'm about to overdose on wrestling.
I took a week off. It was great. Watched a bunch of movies, played some games.
Did you watch The Wrestler? Did you watch Ready to Rumble?
I didn't watch any wrestling movies, thank you. No, I watched a lot of old movies. I gotta preface this. On Ring Post Radio, I said I watched old movies the other day, and Ryan got mad at me because he was thinking like I meant like 80s, 70s movies. I was like, no. Like old movies of like my childhood type thing, like not old movies. So I gotta preface that. But it's been great. It's been great. And then wrestling slapped me in the face a little bit this weekend. And it really slaps you back in the face next weekend, and then we're all Then it's tournament time, and
we'll steam ahead, whether you're ready or not.
I am not ready for the five-star Grand Prix. Thank you for asking.
Stardom's not either. They've still got four people to announce at this point in time.
Well, thankfully for us today, we were not talking about a Stardom Wrestlers era. We were talking about a Marigold's Wrestlers era of Queen's Quest. And
a Wave Wrestlers era in a little bit of it. Technically.
But like I said at the very, very top before we went off our little ramble, we are talking the Queen's Quest era of Utami Hayashishita as its leader. Also the change before, like the little time before they officially got a leader post Momo Watanabe. And we'll bring it all the way down to present day and where the group stands. This is part three of the three-part series. If you haven't checked it out, you can check out the Io Shirai era. You can check out the Momo Watanabe era. And then, of course, this one as we go. This should be a lot of fun. This is the most recent. I think a lot of fans know it. You know, a lot of new fans obviously have come in and they knew it as the Utami group, which is crazy to me to think about. I don't know why. I don't know if this happens to anyone else, but like sometimes when you start something, sometimes it's hard for me to like grasp that other people start like later when it's something not as good. And I guess I kind of feel I should feel that way just about Stardom as a whole these days. It's like, oh, yeah. I mean, it was 2-3 years ago. It was great. Just saying. Like,
is this you being like the snobby, like, oh, you liked them when they became mainstream? You should listen to their independent music before they signed to
That's a classic.
Yeah, when you can only access them by cassette tape, and
I remember when I got
transmitted. Like Stardom, you can't access all their actual good stuff because it's not available on their streaming service. You have to search the high seas and all of that. That's the true Stardom experience. Is this the Scott Edwards we're hearing?
Here's the thing. I remember when I got into it in like 2020, and I feel like I was mocked.
Oh, so long ago. You're an original fan there.
No, that's not what I'm saying. But like, I was mocked for like not being original. Now it's like they're like, oh, now it's mainstream. I was like, not really. Nothing's happening. Like, there's no wrestling on at all right now. Now it's mainstream. Like now Stardom's very mainstream, you know, Tony Khan's got his claws on it now, like, you know, all these different things. But I went back into history, so I saw all the good stuff.
You got him before Utami versus Shuri. That's the cutoff point.
That's very true. That is actually the cutoff point. I think that's very fair. At least I feel that really is the cutoff point. There's a few cutoff points that feels like the major one. The other cutoff point is Queendom 2023 because Mercedes Moné was there. That's the other cutoff point I give people. It's like, all right, that's it. And now the current one where all these other new fans are watching Stardom for the first time, you know, get out of here. You know what I mean? I'm sorry. Like, no. Anyways, let's get to the actual topic of the show.
It's fun for me to be able to say is like the first time I got a ticket to a Stardom show, you could actually message the wrestlers because they hadn't cut off that format of interaction with them because there wasn't so many fans yet that was annoying them. You could message them and say, hey, can I just reserve a ticket through you? And they'd just reply and say, hey, yes, you can. And they'd get a commission from it. That's the quote unquote good old days. So I can show the gray in my hairs.
You know what the good old days for me are? I'm not going to do that. We're not going to do that. When Queen's Quest existed. Anyways, let's get to it. Let's get to it. So, of course, we are following the Momo Watanabe turn. We are going directly right after that. So, the roster as of December 18th, 2021 was Azumi, Utami Hayashishita, Saya Kawatani, and Hina. That's it. That was the faction. Great. Obviously we talked about last episode, Momo made the heel turn, smashing Azumi with the chair, joining Oedo Tai, leaving them kind of empty. Obviously you still have the super trio that was Saya, Azumi, and Utami leading the way, but it would take a few more months until a leader was truly established. But before we get there, December 29th was a very important date for Queen's Quest, as while Saya Kawatani finally won the Wonder of Stardom Championship, which would, of course, lead to the record-breaking reign, Utami dropped the World of Stardom Championship to Shuri in the main event, ending her year-plus-long reign as champion and kind of setting us up at a point where I remember this of like, okay, so Utami's going to obviously go feud with, you know, Momo and Oedo Tai and things make sense, while Saya, you know, kind of takes up the mantle and leads as champion, you know, after defeating Tam and getting the spot. No, that didn't happen. Saya did. The Saya part happened.
Yeah.
But the Utami part did not at all.
Kind of. That's the awkward thing about this period. They half committed to it and they half didn't. And that's where it kind of falls apart.
They decommitted from it. Like three
different times. They dipped their toes into it. And I'm not sure whether it's because Natsuka Toro was out for as long as she was. And obviously with her injuries, we knew she wasn't going to be back shortly. Maybe they thought, oh, we can make this work without her. And then they thought, no, we want to wait until she comes back to do this properly. Or what really goes, we don't know the full story there, whether they were trying and it just wasn't clicking, whether they realized with Saya Kawatani off doing the white belt stuff, it wasn't really going to work. I don't know. The one thing I do like from this sort of period that you look at it is, in my head canon, and it's not official, but I think you can draw a really nice kind of conclusion to it, is it works really nicely. Utami's had this beautiful run with the World of Stardom Championship. And the moment Momo turns her back on Queen's Quest, she gets distracted, and that's all it takes for her to lose her concentration, lose that red belt. And all of a sudden, like, she's kind of torn between with Queen's Quest, now I kind of have to step up as leader, but she's not the leader. So, like, it's all it takes for her, you know, in this super competitive period in Stardom, when you know, only takes a little bit to fall off your game, and that's all it takes to no longer be the very best in the company. Shuri comes in, obviously, like, we know how tight Utami and Shuri was in that sort of top position. That's all it took for her to fall from grace. And then, you know, 2022 was a period where she's kind of having to rebuild herself. And it makes sense that, you know, she's not in that sort of top running for a bit.
Went longer than 2022. It was a long time. You know, but I learned that Utami was a great leader early on because she, you know, it takes a few months, which we'll talk about the lead up to the match that the leader is crowned, but you know, she could have just said, I'm the leader. She never said that, unlike someone who said that and then fumbled the entire group. But let's get to kind of when, you know, things get back in motion for the group, right? It's rebuild time for Queen's Quest. Again, this is while we call it the Otami era, this is these three leading it kind of equally in their own way. Obviously, Azumi is about to win the high-speed title as well, which we'll get to. So it's a very interesting dynamic between, you know, you're about to have 2 year-plus reigning runs of titles while Otami just kind of sits back and, like you said, rebuilds herself up post Momo turn, post dropping the world title.
Yeah. Wikipedia lists this, and obviously Wikipedia is a dubious source because it's not official. Wikipedia lists this as a de facto Azumi leadership era. It's not an Azumi leadership era. Let's get this straight. She's not the leader during this period. She doesn't act as the leader. If you're watching, you know, the shows during this time, she's not leading the group. The reason why she's listed as the quote-unquote de facto leader during this period is because she's always kind of acted as the commander, the behind-the-scenes person. So the theory is when there's no set leader, she kind of falls into the leadership role. Watch the group during the time. Utami is kind of serving as the quote-unquote leader without there being a leader. I just want to get that out there. People like to call her the leader during this period. She's not. She's not. And you'll see that through some of these things that pop up, Utami's the one making a lot of the calls here, even though she's not the official leader.
It's also notable during this time, obviously Hino is still in and out and has been since as a student. So when I say rebuild,
he cares about her education.
Yeah. Rina doesn't. Hino does. That has been the long time been the story.
Yeah, Rina belongs in Oedo Tai as a delinquent student.
Yeah. So on January 3rd, which was a pretty big show for Stardom at the time, mostly known for the debuts of Mirai and Tekla, this was the same show that Lady C would officially join Queen's Quest after helping even the odds against Oedo Tai from an attack. Another Wikipedia incorrect take. She did not scare off Oedo Tai. Instead, she got her ass beat.
Offense in, and then like she tried to take on Momo Watanabe, and that very quickly, she delivered the axe chop, and then
you gotta remember
act in the rest of Queen's Quest, even the odds.
Momo's in her time of figuring out the Black Peach character that she was soon becoming. But this was very important because, you know, this is Lady C in the lead up had long been trying to figure out when she would join a faction. At times it felt like DDM. That was like, you know, she consistently teamed with Himeka and Mika a lot, and there was a connection there. And a lot of people believe maybe that would be her spot. Obviously, she would join Queen's Quest here, which was much needed at the time. While Lady C is, we know what Lady C is. It's a number. They needed numbers. They didn't have numbers. Especially when your numbers are Azumi, Utami, and Saya for majority of shows. You got to get someone in there that can take some losses because you don't want to see those three getting pinned all too much.
Yeah, she serves a role. And she also, at this point in time, like she had been under the learning tree of a lot of different people for a long time, but what she really needed was someone that she could really come under the wing of and have that consistent learning period. And, you know, she was improving, and she cited Queen's Quest as a group that she had wanted to work with for quite a while. They were the first group that she kind of came under. That was her seconds in her debut match, and she'd learned a lot from during that period, as well as like Donna Del Mondo. So it made sense for her to want to join Queen's Quest in story as well. But this was a chance for her to, join a group that would be able to help her. She wasn't necessarily someone who needed a lot of help on the character front. She just needed people to really help build her as an in-ring performer because she lost a lot. And Queen's Quest is a group that can really help you learn in-ring. So this was a good chance for her. And Queen's Quest needed someone that they could send out there to protect them from taking pinfalls, especially when Hina was hitting the books. So it made sense from both sides, especially while they're dealing with a group like Oedo Tai, where they were dealing with a numbers disadvantage like they were here. You know, it was a 4-on-3 beatdown. Lady C was able to make this a 4-on-4 beatdown against them.
Yeah. So the Oedo Tai story is one that continues early on in the year of 2022. And it really hits its, I think biggest moment of it all, truthfully, because it never had enough follow-up after the fact, which was on January 8th, Azumi Watanabe went one-on-one. Yes. And that is
a main event.
Pretty famous match. Really good match, if anyone happens to care. It was a really great match. But this is the match that Momo Watanabe knocked out Azumi with the wrench punt kick that legitimately injured her, made her a bloody mess. It also took out the wrench for a while. AKA, we never saw it again.
Well, we did say for a bit after this, but they were more careful.
She didn't do the punt anymore. The kick got a lot weaker. Let's just say the bat was very important by soon enough, because the bat was like,
they realized, using a full strength kick that has a metal object inside of it is a bit dangerous even for Stardom standards.
The wrench was awesome. Hot take, wrench was awesome. But concusses Azumi, who was forced to miss a couple weeks after this. It was a really gnarly injury, but at the same time, it made to me Momo feel that more scary or that more dangerous in this heel role. Obviously, I think Azumi and Momo were probably going for something like that. It just, took a turn for the worse when you hit her.
If this was a worked concussion spot, this would have been amazing and perfectly executed. The fact that it wasn't is the problem.
Yeah.
And you can tell this kind of screwed with the Oedo Tai Queen's plans a bit, because they kind of have to, the stuff they're doing in this kind of post-match situation is really awkward, because they're having this big dramatic back and forth with Utami and Starlight Kid and then Momo, while Azumi's just dead on the floor, and they're kind of having to work around her. And then, the next night is a 4-on-3 handicap match with a stipulation, essentially, that we'll talk about. Clearly, that probably should have been 4-on-4 to make it a bit fairer. And then there's plans that get changed around. And, it probably also contributes to why they kind of have to cool off this story a bit, because they weren't sure when Azumi would be well enough to jump back into it. And
there's also a lot of online heat towards Momo. Mm-hmm. From Japanese fans, I vividly remember, which, probably made them also back off, because she was getting a lot of unnecessary hate, but that's the way the business.
Again, she's a young woman, just turned heel for the first time. That is tough to deal with, like, not used to it.
Yeah, at the time she was 21, maybe 20. Yeah, but the next day would mark, it would be the end of an era in Queen's Quest. And maybe in some ways the end of the Queen's Quest we all knew. Just the beginning, the long-term beginning, when the masks would soon disappear. This would mark the last time they would don the Queen's Quest masks, after Starlight Kids pretty much said, Oedo Tai gets the win, and they said, only the masked wrestler should be donning the mask. Mind you, Mayu Yutani still does indeed don her mask from time to time in her entrance.
She's not offended by the icon wearing a mask, apparently. Another interesting thing I found funny with this whole situation, because this debate goes on the January 8th show. Again, while Azumi's concussed on the floor, they're making this debate.
Yes.
Starlight Kid calls it out. You people aren't mask wrestlers. Only mask wrestlers should get to wear masks. And then Utami says, that's okay, Momo Watanabe. We inherited this from Momo Watanabe. And I'm sort of thinking, forget the first leader used to wear these as well, which is kind of funny now looking back at the very recent stuff that happened.
We'll talk about that. Just worth noting, on the 29th of that month, Azumi did make her return. It went from Momo versus Utami at Nagoya Supreme Fight to a tag match, which was highly unfortunate at the time. It went to Momo and Starlight Kid versus Azumi and Utami Hayashishita in a tag, rather than the big singles match that ultimately we kind of got, but not really. Like, when I say kind of, we'll talk about the tug of war match that they did. That was the only way we got it, which is still insane to me all these years later. That was ultimately all we got.
They were building to this big Utami versus Momo match. Again, it was built up at this Kirk and Hall doubleheader that they had. You know, Utami wanted Momo in this singles match. It felt like they were going to make this a big deal. And like Momo knocking out Azumi, you know, it made sense, the logical build-up. And then out of nowhere, it got turned into this tag match. You were thinking, okay, you know, Azumi has a reason to be pissed. This is going to feel a really intense grudge match. And the match itself, I don't know whether they were protecting Azumi a bit coming back after the concussion, but there was no heat to the match. Like it was just kind of, I can't remember if it was an opening match or second match on the card, but
it was this, second.
It really under-delivered given the what was going on at the time, and was maybe a sign that this feud wasn't going to be what we were hoping for. We weren't going to get what we're hoping for another year and a half, basically. But yeah,
it ultimately was a preview tag for the high speed title match a month later, rather than a preview tag for the big Momo Utami match that we all had expected. But that brings us to February 23rd, which was, of course, at an incredible show, Cinderella Journey, which was huge. Huge time show in terms of just top-tier matches, but nothing better than Azumi defeating Starlight Kid in an instant classic to win the high-speed championship for a second time, which would, of course, mark the start of Azumi's record-breaking reign as champion. This match, as a Stardom fan, you have seen it. I have seen it. We've seen some matches go viral in terms of, like, match of the year type stuff. It was this one. This was like the second one. This was the one that followed Shuri and Utami. This is the one that got all the talk. Just a tremendous match between the two that, you know, there's a reason they are seen as forever rivals. Yes, they may be in a faction now together, but they're best one-on-one against each other. And this was a fantastic match to do so. And, you know, again, worth noting, this would set Azumi on that record-breaking reign, while Utami, again, is rebuilding herself to record-breaking reigns are happening in the same group.
Yeah, this is the match that, like, if you've seen GIFs and images and, like, footage from Starlight Kid versus Azumi, this is probably the match you've seen if you're not familiar with Stardom. Like, if you've just stumbled across stuff, this is probably the match you've come across. It's the iconic image of Azumi standing over Kid doing the fist bump. Coming, like, a year after Shuri versus Utami Hayashishita, that match kind of got a lot of praise because it felt like the women's version of New Japan Pro Wrestling. But this is kind of a match that felt quintessential Stardom for a lot of people. Yeah. So please watch this match. This is what women can do that you don't see from anywhere else in the world. This kind of felt like, for a lot of people, the true Stardom experience. And I'm glad this match got as much virality as it did, because these two have been working so hard for years in the Stardom system and continue to work so hard in the Stardom system. To get this kind of attention that they got was so deserved. And I still don't think they've matched it against each other, and I'm really glad this got the attention it did. What a perfect way to sort of, for Azumi to kind of get back into the swing of it after that unfortunate injury. Yeah, kicking off one of the best title reigns I think Stardom has had in terms of, like, impact and importance, lifting the high-speed championship to heights it has never reached before or after. And, it sort of puts Utami in an awkward position. Sai is having a record-breaking reign, and Azumi is about to have a record-breaking reign. At least Utami's realizing, hey, I need to go back to her short hair around this time. She cuts the long hair. That's what she needs to do. She's starting to piece things together.
It's funny, too, because, you know, decisions are starting to be made for Queen's Quest, and it's very clear Utami is the one making those decisions.
Oh, yes.
Which brings us to March 11th, the first ever New Blood event. The main event would see Utami Hayashishita face the debuting first rookie since Lady C, by the way. So what had it been by then? 2 years? Was it 2 years almost?
Yeah, it was a long time.
Yeah, because obviously the pandemic, they weren't training or trying anyone out. And that, of course, was one Miyu Amasaki debuting in the main event of New Blood. And while Miyu Masaki obviously did not win, she had a good showing against the former World of Stardom champion. And the former World
November
of Stardom champion.
2020 was when Lady C debuted.
Yeah, so not 2 full years, but a long time. A year and a half before the first rookie debut. And by then, you know, Amasaki's debuting has a lot of shine on her, you know, maybe unnecessary shine as well, because I think there was super pressure for her right off the bat. Obviously, she's debuting this brand new theme show against Utami. Not easy to handle. And she ended up being someone, you know, I think took some time, obviously, but, you know, she's celebrated a lot these days. But this is very important, because her joining Queen's Quest would kind of set her up on the path to improvement. And that would, you know, be alongside Azumi. But it was Utami that made the decision to welcome her to Queen's Quest, which Amasaki accepted. So, you know, Wikipedia can say whatever they want about Azumi being the de facto leader. She was not. She did not get these, you know, Utami was making all these decisions, and that's very important. While this isn't considered her time as leader, she was making decisions leading up to when she would officially become the leader.
Yes. At least with the Lady C edition, Utami like hinted to Azumi, like, we should bring Lady C in because we need additional numbers. We need reinforcements. She never officially deferred to Azumi to make the call, but she said to Azumi, we need to bring people in. With this edition of Miyu Amasaki, obviously there may have been discussions behind the scenes that we are not privy to. But at no point, you know, in the post-match comments that she makes, she doesn't allude to talking with Azumi. She doesn't say, I've talked with Azumi, or as a Queen's Quest as a unit, we've discussed this. She just says, I think you should join Queen's Quest. So in the appearance for everyone here, it looks like Utami is solely making this decision. Azumi's not on the card. She might have been watching backstage. She might have been sort of in the upper echelon watching, but she's not actively involved in this decision from what we can see. This is purely an Utami decision, and Miyu Amasaki decides. Azumi doesn't really get a say in it, and the very next day, Miyu is involved in Queen's Quest. So Azumi doesn't get a choice or say in the matter. That's the end of the story. If Azumi was involved in the leadership, even though it's not official until later on, by this point in time, Utami has essentially taken the reins.
Yeah. Yeah. Azumi and Saya went on their title reigns. Utami focused on being leader, essentially, which we'll get to. But that tug of war match we were talking about, so it ended up being a 5-on-5 match, 5 singles. And that would break down to Utami versus Momo in the opening match. So there you go. You got it. That's it. Really great for the minutes it had. Went to a draw. Big shock.
Saki Kashima giving away what was going to be the final result of this.
Exactly. Saki Kashima defeated Lady C. Azumi defeated Rina. Sayakawa Tani defeated Ruaka. And Starlight Kid defeated Miyu Amasaki. So one day after her debut, she steps into the big role of defending Queen's Quest. Like I said, the pressure was put on this poor girl very quickly, very early. And I think, you know, once that pressure was taken off of her a little bit, she succeeded. And she's kind of the most important fourth person to talk about through this time. Cause she does have these important little moments through the Utami era of Queen's Quest. But this was kind of in a way, a very weird blow off, because this was a house show. This was not a big Korakuen. This wasn't a big pay-per-view. They would still feud, but it would be relegated to just weekend house show matches. Nothing of seriousness for really a whole year.
Yeah. Takadanababa, where this took place, kind of existed in a weird spot in the Stardom sort of period, where it sits in terms of importance, in terms of shows, is a really weird spot, because it's not as important as Korakuen Hall or pay-per-views or stuff, but whenever they do run Takadanababa, especially during this time, it was always slightly more important than any other sort of just house show. They, you know, this is where Mayu Iwatani fought all of Oedo Tai to try and win back Starlight Kid. This is where they ran a lot of the fan meets and they ran like the end of year awards. So for a couple of years, whenever they ran Takadanobaba, it always felt like they tried to make it a little bit more special, like this tug of war event, but they never went overboard. They were always felt like they were a little afraid of making it too important. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting, you know, seeing these kind of events around this time. It's almost like if this was at Kurikan Hall, they would have maybe given us a decisive winner in the Oedo Tai Queen's Quest 5-on-5 series. But because it was at Takadanobaba, they kind of pulled back and just made it an overall draw. But it is what it is. But yeah, it was a shame they kind of pulled back, because after going 2-2-1, it felt like they should have kept going, given us like a proper blow-off to Itami versus Momo, because why would either of these two would have been content with a time limit draw?
Mm-hmm.
But apparently, you know, both had bigger fish to fry. Momo wanted to go for tag belts with Starlight Kid, apparently, and I guess Itami wanted to settle the leadership thing. But it's important to note, like, a lot of people say, oh, well, after this, Queen's Quest would determine the leader. That doesn't happen straight away. It's not like after this, like, in 2 weeks' time, they have their battle royal. It takes a couple of months.
Yeah. Yeah. It really did. It took two more months until they had the big time 5v5 elimination match to determine the leader of Queen's Quest. And it would go down to Azumi and Utami Hayashishita to determine who would be the new leader, with Big Shock, Utami, being the one to get the win. Kind of not all that surprising. Of course, this happened at Kurikan Hall as well. So this would be the role to really cement herself as the leader. And I remember thinking back to like this match and the idea of this match, and I always thought it was better because, and yeah, you know, you threw everyone in there because it was fair, but like in a way, just having the main three fight for it felt right. Because you could have made any of them leader at that time, truthfully, right? We're in the midst of a special wonder of starting title reign for Sayakawa Tani. By May, she had already been a number of defenses in, number of great, great matches in. Then you have Azumi, who has been the longest running member. She had the best claim to it, if you just look at that alone and how long she'd been going, how much she's grown since the beginning when she joined. And of course, Utami, who had the, you know, like the obvious, oh, she will be the leader type. And I just think the match was a smart choice. I prefer little things like this rather than, you know, kind of what we've seen recently with the I'm the leader that Saya just did, that they had her do. But it is what it is. But this was very important because this would start the Utami era truly. And it would bring us to, of course, one of the best stories Stardom ever told, but that wouldn't be for another year later.
Yeah, I think if nothing else, Queen's Quest should almost always be decided definitively, because as Io Shirai kind of told us, you know, when we looked at the first episode, it's all about being the best. That's how Queen's Quest is built. It's trying to fight, even if you have to fight amongst yourselves, to bring out the best wrestling version of yourself. So it kind of makes sense in this sort of Queen's Quest environment where you've got a couple of wrestlers who all kind of have a fair stake to the claim. Sort it out in the ring. Don't just kind of, you're not going to have a diplomatic debate behind the scenes. Oh, I bring this to the table, but you bring this. Or you're not going to have someone just stand up and say, I should be leader. No, go in the ring and determine it. And why not give everyone a chance? Hina survived in this battle royal longer than Saikamatani did. That's something to keep in mind. So she could have fought her way to the leadership here. Would it have been hilarious? Absolutely. But she would have earned the right if she'd actually won this thing, you know. So it worked in the context of Queen's Quest in this kind of environment. Utami, yes, she was the obvious choice, but she had to earn it. And it makes sense in this realm of where Azumi has technically been in Queen's Quest longer for Utami to prove herself better than Azumi in this situation to earn the right to lead. Azumi now steps back, subjects herself, subservient to Utami, because as in like the Animal Kingdom, Utami is the alpha woman in this situation. It's been proven.
Mm-hmm. She is the top. She is the queen of queen. Sorry, I had to do it. So June 26th, this is important. This is very important because they do participate in the second steel cage match in Stardom's history, right after Tam versus Poi, of course, which was the fun cage match of the show, right? They had two cage matches on these shows, and it was like there was no stakes really. It was just let's just have a crazy match. That's what they did, and they, you know, I think that's very important because 1 year later they would step inside the cage in a very, very, very different scenario. But it helped make that match all the more special. But the rest of 2022 is not that great of a year in terms of like Queen's Quest itself. As singles competitors, it's amazing for Shia, it's amazing for Azumi. They continue their record reigns, they continue to build those up. And this is the core that Queen's Quest is. Your members are Utami, Shia, Azumi, Hina, Lady C, and Miyu Amasaki. And that is your group all the way until really Shia Kamatani screws it all up. It's until Tommy leaves, and then Saya Kamatani screws it all up. They would make it to the finals of the Goddess of Stardom Tag League. That would be, of course, Aphrodite, before losing to 7-Up to Nai Takahashi and Yu. Also in the tag league, Azumi would partner with Miyu Amasaki to form the very important O2 line that has become a very strong team in Stardom's current tag team world. And before we get to Dream Queendom, which is very important for Utami's growth, there was Utami challenging Shuri for the World of Stardom Championship, her first real shot at kind of getting redeemed again. She obviously had the big win over Shuri in the 5-Star Grand Prix to earn the opportunity, which was her first big win over her. But I just wanted to bring that up before the ultimate match with Kairi at Dream Queendom on December 29th.
This match, I think, is pretty important when talking about the leadership of Queen's Quest, and specifically Utami, because all through this year, like, you're looking at individual success for Queen's Quest. You've got Azumi and you've got Saya Kamatani doing fantastic. Queen's Quest, the unit, is like, they're very non-existent. You've got Donna Del Mondo doing great things, Cosmic Angel's doing great things, Stars have kind of rebounded really well, Hazuki's joined, and like, they feel stronger than ever. Queen's Quest is just kind of there. They're not, as a faction, they're just kind of there because they're almost like a historic artifact.
As a faction, they felt like the fourth group at best. You got to remember, like, God's Eye had just been made, too, so there's a lot of focus on them, right? Mirai had won a lot of things, and hell, like, even Prominence was around for much of the year. So, like, Queen's Quest was bounced back in
and
out, too.
And they were being involved. And, yeah, people were starting, like, you get the comments toward the end of Momo's run, like, what's she doing as leader? But at least she had that initial strong run as leader, being leading by example as champion. Utami had done everything she had before she was champion, but now that she was leading, there's no real accolade that she could point to. It's like, hey, I'm the leader, look at what I've done. She'd earned it in the Battle Royal, but she'd done nothing since then. And then Kairi basically calls her out, because the other point of being a leader is how are you lifting up the rest of the faction? And she's looking at what they're doing with Miyu Amasaki, and she says this, which I think is really interesting. This is in the build-up to – it was actually the build-up to the Flashing Champions when they would have a match, but it ties into their Dream Queendom match, because Kairi, they're in a tag match where it's Miyu Amasaki and Utami Hayashishita teaming together facing Kairi. And it's, you're supposed to be her leader, right? Are you maybe trying to train Miyu Amasaki-kun while taking it easy on her? Because for me – right in my debut, even I got a nosebleed thanks to my beaten face. My training was harsh. But for me, it feels like now I have this really strong like proof. So I'm glad I went through that. I feel like it's thanks to that that I've become strong. Now, I want to specifically call out a thanks to Dana, who provided the English translation for this. And really, for a couple of years there, she was providing full-on English translations for all of the press conferences during this period, which, as someone who was doing a lot of writing on a lot of topics around this time, was an absolute godsend. And this particular period, she covered a lot of it. So that gives you a good insight to how Kairi was looking at what Utami's upbringing for Miyu Amasaki was. And it ties into, like, well, Itami is a leader. What's she doing here? Because she's not leading by individual success. And you look at Miyu Amasaki, who came in with a lot of hype. Justified or not, you could query, but you know, Itami's made a point to bring her under her wing. And that first year, for 6 months to a year, she was popular, but maybe hadn't stepped forward and made certain improvements like you would hope for. Now you look at her in 2024 and like the hype that was surrounding her, you can definitely see why that was. But you know, she still felt like a little nervous bundle of energy, hadn't really translated to big steps forward in the ring. Now, is it fair to blame that on Itami? Maybe, maybe not. But Kairi definitely put the pressure on Itami there as a newish leader. So you've got Itami now taking shots from two fronts as an individual performer acting as a leader and as someone building up. You know, you've got three up-and-comers in Lady C, Miyu Amasaki, and Hina looking to Itami for leadership. Is she the right person for the job all of a sudden?
Yeah, this would mark a, I think, an unofficial shift to the story that would be heavily told in the summer of 2023. This is the first slight marks of it. And, you know, now that we look back and see, we're like, okay, this is where they were going. They were starting to tell that story. But let's get to 2023, which, again, wasn't a loud start of the year for Queen's Quest, but it's finally kicking the gear soon after. So the first few months, there was the Triangle Derby. They did put the Super Trio together, and the Super Trio did not win the whole thing. They finished just third in the group, in the block, which stupid. Just to think about. And then they tried to challenge for the titles for prominence on April 2nd. Failing to do so. So, like, what's worth noting here, it's very funny to think back, by the way, the Triangle Derby, the first one was just won by prominence. Yeah. not that the Triangle Derby, what a history that tournament ended up having. On March 26th, no members of Queen's Quest managed to advance to the second round of the Cinderella tournament, with all six being eliminated in the first round. So it's not a hot start. Not a hot start for this group, and it just keeps getting worse. On April 23rd at All-Star Grand Queendom, the Wonder of Stardom Championship was officially dropped by Saya Kamatani, ending her record-breaking reign as the champion and watching Mina Shirakawa win the championship at Yokohama Arena. Obviously a fantastic match and a fantastic completion to Saya's run as Wonder of Stardom Champion. But this would start the tilt in Queen's Quest that we had all been waiting for. I think it's worth noting, for a lot of Utami's run in Queen's Quest, it really did feel like she was waiting for the other two to not be busy with their title reigns. And you kind of felt that with her booking. Because as soon as Saya drops it, the story starts to kick into gear, which brings us to May 4th. Aphrodite lost a match to Julia and Micah on pay-per-view, where Utami lost to Micah clean in the middle of the ring. After the match, Saya commented, "Lately, we've been losing a lot of important matches," with which Utami takes to mean Saya is placing blame on her for. "I remember that presser like it was yesterday. I remember the frustration between the two. I remember the anger between the two. And that's when everyone started to say, oh no." Like, they were like, "Oh, what is happening? Are they about to split these two?" Because at the time, I will say, like, it did make some sense. You know, Saya had gotten to a point where it's like she could easily lead her own faction now. She just came off a record-breaking reign. It is, you know, it was a point in her career where if that's the move they wanted to make, they could have easily made. And they started to then shift, of course, towards the Oedo Tai story. Azumi would drop the high-speed championship in a three-way on May 27th, which would again lead to more failure in the group, while Aphrodite continues to be unable to be on the same page both in and out of the ring. If you were watching the house shows at this time, every single match felt like there was a slip up between these two. They just were not on the same page. Frustration was growing. Even when they win, frustration was really growing within these two specific.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And it would soon carry out to the rest of the group, where the question became, can they believe in Utami as leader? The leadership of Utami Hayashishita was seriously being doubted at this point. And that ultimately was the story that Natsuko Tora and Oedo Tai tried to take from. You saw teases leading to the big match at Stardom Sunshine. You would see teases of them trying to get Saya Kamatani to come join them. Saya Kamatani, you would see Momo offer her the bat, and they'd have this moment in the ring, and you're just thinking heading into that match, like, okay, what is going to happen? And the decision was the loser leaves unit match inside a steel cage at Stardom Sunshine. 6 versus 6. You'd have Azumi, Hina, Lacey, Miyu Amasaki, Saya Kamatani, and Utami Hayashishita versus Momo Watanabe, Natsuko Tora, Rina Ruaka, Saki Kashima, and Starlight Kid. And I remember going into this. This is a fun, because I remember like every step of this. I remember how I felt going into the match. I remember how I felt leaving the match. Going into this match, I think the story was great. Like, the story was great. I was invested. I was like, this is what a steel cage makes sense for. But I also remember, you know, if you just take it as the match aspect, you're like, okay, 12 people in a cage. I have no idea how this is going to work. Right? That was a big topic point as well. They're like, maybe this is too much. A lot of people were pitching, maybe it should just be the top three versus the top three of each unit, right? Tora, Momo, and Kid versus the big three of Queen's Quest. These were conversations that were being had at the time, but ultimately the story wasn't just about those three or even just Utami and Saya. It was about Utami and the rest of her group. She was coming up short for the rest of her group, and through this match she was going to prove why, once and for all, she was not only the leader but one of the very best. And at the time, I remember saying, she is now Stardom's top. Like, this is where you ride with her, you bring her back to the top. Obviously, things that no one could have ever expected would follow all of this. But heading into that match, let's talk about that match. Let's talk about that moment. Let's talk about that night. Obviously, it's an elimination match. It's not an elimination match. It's escape the cage. And whoever was last left in the cage would have to leave their group. So step by step, you get the kids out early. And everyone's just hitting something here and there. There was never a moment in this match where the action stopped. I just want to notify that, like, this match was truly incredible. One of the great all-time matches, not just in Stardom's history, but in the history that I've watched wrestling. It is truly fantastic. And you know, you're telling these little story bits as the time goes on, and ultimately the whole story is down to, you know, you watch Utami get Lady C out. That is one of the big things, right? You are watching Utami be the leader she wants to be. Win or lose, she is going to go down as the leader of Queen's Quest, and that is the entire story being told here. You know, Saya Kamatani's able to get out, and that leaves Utami all by herself in the middle of the ring against Natsuko Tora and Saki Kashima. And you know, sometimes things happen on accident that make a match better. Utami is accidentally broken open. She has the crimson mask going and she is fighting for her life. Natsuko Tora gets to the point where she has to decide, do I save myself or do I risk it? Right? Utami at this point looks down and out. Like, there's nothing left in her. Saki and Tora feel like they can just get out. But, you know, Utami fights back. She's able to ultimately take out Saki Kashima in the end. And that, of course, leads them to the climb, right? The climb. The climb that felt like it took hours almost for poor Utami as she slowly climbed. Messiah went up to reach for her and Momo teased, take the bat. And Messiah takes the bat. I remember that moment. I was like, no, 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 no. And Messiah hits Momo, grabs Utami's hand. Some of the best camera work I've ever seen in pro wrestling. They watch the hand grab. They look at each other face to face on top of the cage and they escape to win the match. Keeps Queen's Quest together, proving Utami Hayashishita is not only supposed to be leader, but she's one of the best, if not the best leader this company can have, right? She is leading Queen's Quest by example. She showed it with every competitor in this match, making sure that no matter what, they would be able to carry Queen's Quest on forward if she wasn't there, which is kind of funny to think about now where we are in history and how that is exactly what happened. But it was such a perfect match, such a perfect story, and ultimately the defining moment of Utami's reign as Queen's Quest leader.
Yeah, I wrote probably I think it was a week after this match happened that Utami won the right to lead Queen's Quest on May 15th, 2022, but she earned the right to lead on this night. I'm not going to talk too much about the match because I think you covered it perfectly there. But the best way I can describe it is that this match is one of the few times in the decades that I've been watching professional wrestling since I've been a kid where it transported me back to being a kid watching wrestling. I've for a long time now I've been sort of that cynical adult watching wrestling through the lens of a quote-unquote smart fan, where you're watching it and with one eye kind of thinking from the booking standpoint and from a backstage standpoint, okay, so where are they going with this? What's the next step? And not being able to just fully immerse myself as just someone committed to a fan watching in the front row, just being like in awe of what's going on in front of me, like I would if I was watching a movie play out. This transported me back to like watching Stone Cold and The Rock fighting like the Authority in WWF Raw every single Monday night, where like I don't remember if I knew whether it was real or not. And when Mr. McMahon would do something against them, it was like, how could he do that? That's not fair. You know, I was just fully committed with what Utami was doing. And like, she was fighting, you know, when she got Lady C out of the, she could have tried to escape herself and save her own skin, but she took the time to get Lady C on her shoulders to help get her to escape. And then she made sure Saya Kamatani was able to escape. She was leading from example, even was to sacrifice herself. And in that moment, I was like, oh, Utami, I just need you to get out, girl. And then when, Saya got the baseball bat, I was like, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. And I was just fully invested in a way that wrestling hadn't got me in legitimately probably 20 plus years. which is just like, I can't believe me as a jaded 30-plus-year-old man could be transported back to. And I've rewatched that match since several times. And that moment on the cage when Saya's, you know, done the right thing and lifted her back up and they have their moment there and Utami's still gushing blood because of what had happened, it still gets to me. Like, it has that kind of effect on me even after everything that's happened. That's when you know wrestling kind of hits its peak. And that's what, even now, like, I look at that and, like, as a match, it's a very rare that it can be that special. Is it a technical masterpiece, you know, for headlocks and hammer locks and chain wrestling? No. It's a cage match with 12 people jumping off and doing crazy stunts. It's not that kind of match. But from an emotional storytelling perspective, whether you've been following the story from day one or whether you jump into that show for the very first time and just see it fold out, it's just perfectly executed. And it's very rare that a match can do that so well.
I have said this once before, but I'll say it again right here on this podcast. To me, this was the perfect end to Queen's Quest as we knew it, because little did we know after all this, the hardships and the injuries and the difficulties they'd experience over the next year to bring us to where we are now. If you look back to this moment in this match, this was the culmination of not only Tommy's run in Queen's Quest, but really just Queen's Quest and what it was always about. You know, they were the coolest faction. They were the best faction. And you felt that on that night while they were, you know, almost non-existent for most of 2022 as a group. It almost didn't matter because of the way the story was told and the way Tommy had that moment of being the leader time and time again. You know, I think everyone looks to that end with Saya and her, but I always think to the Lady C one first, because it's like you're seeing in real time the story they're telling, and it's such a perfectly done story. Like, I don't know if Stardom has perfected a story like that. Like, it wasn't long. It wasn't a long told story. It was like a few months tops. Like, you know, you just had started to have little cracks, and it was start to finish perfect. It was truly perfect, the perfect ending. And I think it's, you know, it's really just special, the moment that they all got to share. And again, they didn't know what was going to happen over the next year. We didn't know what was going to happen over the next year. But I'm happy, if you're a fan of Queen's Quest, if you're a fan of Utami, if you're a fan of Aphrodite, this was your moment. This was the moment you can carry on, because they got to have this moment together, which, you know, ultimately brings us to everything else that has happened since then, because everything else started to not really make all too much sense. Like, right from the start, it didn't make sense. So Utami, it is announced that starting July 8th, Utami is going to America, and she will be. I remember this announcement. It was like 1 week out. GCW announced that Utami would be competing in their promotion for three shows, and I was like, "What? Why?" Like, none of it made, it still doesn't make sense to me. We still don't, there has never been an explanation of why this happened ever. And we never really got the full story of it, because fast forward to the 5-star Grand Prix, where these two, Saya and Utami, are going in as the odds on heavy favorites to win this whole thing. Neither of them complete the tournament. Saya Kamatani didn't even get out of night one.
Yeah. I remember very distinctly that when the announcement was Utami was going on her American tour, a lot of people, myself included, thought, okay, this is kind of code for Utami's going to find herself and she's going to come back kind of with a new version of herself. You know, she's going to come back with a bit of a revised gimmick. You know, it's going to be a new style. And that's code for I'm going to win the tournament. Yeah, that's kind of what happened. You come back, you've got a new style, and yeah, it was very, very important when they did, everyone came out at the start of the five-star Grand Prix to pose and everyone's here. She didn't come out with the rest of them. And it kind of added fuel to the fire for that couple of hours. Oh, yeah, they're hiding the new look, Utami Hayashishita. And then it was, oh, no, when she came out, the new Utami is the old Utami. She just brought back the old look, which was cool, but I think was underwhelming because it kind of felt like a backward step. Yeah, it wasn't a forward step to a new Utami, which was kind of what we were hoping for with everything that had happened. Yeah, the old Utami, sure, she'd won the red belt, but she'd taken so many steps forward in her character and her progression that...
The new Utami did take leaving. It just took leaving a promotion as a whole, unfortunately. Yes. You know, like it. Yes. The new Utami that I think a lot of people were looking for to kind of step up, because I remember at that time you and me had talked about, like, Utami might be the new ace of this company. Like, this was her moment. This wasn't just a Queen's Quest moment. This was Utami's defining moment. Mm. And she is now an ace. It's just, again, not of Stardom.
She didn't find it in GCW. Shocker.
No. No, and I really thought the five-star was going to be Utami versus Saya. I really did. They were in separate blocks. It just lined up perfectly. It made so much sense after the story they told. That's what the next step was. And I still think it would have been. I do. I still think it would have been.
If that was the case, and it very well could have been, they fell very fortunately into that one promo where Suzu said to Micah, "I want to see you in the final of the five-star Grand Prix."
Yeah, they did.
They got very lucky with that. And they got very lucky that Micah got hot at the right time and Suzu is as good as she was.
Yeah.
It's a credit to Stardom booking as deeply as they have and having the talent that they have. Very lucky given that it wasn't just Utami and Sai that got injured around this time. But
yeah, so Utami and Saya would both be out of action. Utami would get hurt on the she got hurt at the end of September, so September 18th would be her final match before she'd be out for the next 2 months when she and Saya Kamatani both returned at Cork and Hall alongside Azumi. And that would set them up to be challengers for the vacant Goddess of Stardom Championships, which they would win. And Nagoya Big Winter defeating the Goddess of Stardom Tag League winners, Micah and Megan Bain, to become champions once again. It has been a long time since they held them. Mm. And again, this is why I still think, like, part of their story, like, they were always supposed to be intertwined in the story. Through whether it was Saya winning the five-star, whether it was Tommy winning the five-star. That was always the goal. That's why I firmly believe that's where we were going. But in a way, it was nice to see them back together. And only a few weeks later, after winning the belts, they would put the perfect bow to me and you and many others. They put the perfect bow on top of Queen's Quest versus Oedo Tai when they, you know, it was a competitive match, obviously, but at the end, it was very definitive. You had Utami and Saya pin Momo and Natsuko. Felt like it ended the feud once and for all. This was it, right? This was the way to clean up the cage match aspect of it, right? Because while Utami was the leader, you still had to obviously kind of clean up that story a little bit. They get this dominant win on the biggest show of the year. It was perfect.
My second biggest show of the year.
Well, yes, sorry. We did have a very much bigger show that year and moving forward. But at Once Upon a Time, you know, for like 2 seconds, this was the biggest show of the year. So it's the biggest annual show I get. Well, no, it's not anymore. I guess Queen Dennis is.
Who knows anymore?
I don't know anymore.
Yeah.
I can't sit here and act like
the Dream Queendom name.
Yeah, I can't sit here and act like I know what's annual anymore. But that doesn't matter. So we get to 2024, Aphrodite riding high.
Queen's Quest feels like they're on the up and up a bit here.
And little did we know, according to Tommy, she had already told Stardom she was out. but On January 6th, Ayaka Tani would win a Battle Royal to officially challenge Micah for the World of Stardom Championship. So they would quickly put that into gear. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, she was supposed to be in the main event. You know, it's kind of crazy thinking about to like how Saya might have been the five-star winner or Tommy had been. And they would have faced Tam and yet Extreme Queendom. It was Suzu versus Micah. Like, what a mess.
what a mess. We did get those reports from Dave Meltzer that Saikama Tani was meant to win, which kind of, let's not forget that. We both thought Utami was going to win, but we heard the Saya reports and it was always an interesting discussion there. And then, Saya was the first one picked to challenge Micah. Did create a little bit of intrigue as well. Oh, they course correcting after all this time? Is Micah transitional? Apparently not. Yeah.
Now let's get into the mess. I'm going to read it exactly how Trent wrote it. Because
Have I made mistakes here?
No, it's just very funny. February 4th, Micah successfully retained the title at, what was the name of the show? Supreme Fight? Was this Supreme Fight?
It is Supreme
Fight. Yeah. She defended the title against Saya Kamatani, marking victory one, and then called out Aphrodite teammate Utami Hashishita as the next challenger. In the post-match, everyone gets in the ring to celebrate Stardom's anniversary. This is also the anniversary show, including one Rossi Ogawa. They take this big family photo, big group photo. It was very nice, very wonderful. And on February 5th, Rossi Ogawa is fired from Stardom. That's why they took the photo. That's not related to Queen's Quest, though. I'm sure it won't impact anything here, Trent writes. So, obviously a whirlwind. I don't really feel like sitting here and recapturing. It took a long time to get over the bog and the fog and everything that came with that. What a mess it was. So, that brings us to March 20th when Micah successfully defends the World of Stardom Championship against Utami Hayashishita. They share a nice moment after the match. I think for some people, the writing had been on the wall here. They're starting to this is when I really saw people starting to connect dots of who may be leaving for Marigold. And one day later, Tokyo Sports reported that it would be Utami Hayashishita, among four other names, would be officially leaving Stardom to join Rossi Ogawa in his brand new promotion. At the time, notably, Utami is still the Goddess of Stardom Tag Champions, but not for too much longer. So just 9 days later, Aphrodite would drop the tag belts to Crazy Star Suzuki and Meisara ahead of Utami's departure. That was at the Sendai Pit. What a crime.
Yeah. That's okay. Crazy Star would go and have a nice long reign.
On April 12th, Utami would have her final matches. She'd have the Golden Generation tag match before wrestling Saya Kamatani in a truly, wonderful 5-minute exhibition right after, where they'd have this very emotional goodbye. And Utami had a lot of emotional goodbyes in her last few weeks here. But this would be her official goodbye. No one in the group would officially step up yet, but it would kind of defer Saya Kamatani. But this, in a way, marks the end of Utami's run as the faction leader. So not even 1 year later, after the cage match, she was not only not the leader anymore, she was gone from Stardom, moving on to Marigold, where she would soon become the ace of that group, unless you ask three. Fast forward to April 27th, Saya Kamatani won the high-speed championship in a three-way match against Saki Kashima and Fukigen Death. And at the same show, Momo Watanabe, notably, would lose the World of Stardom Challenge to Micah. This, of course, was Grand Queendom from earlier this year. That's when Saya would kick into gear as the unofficial leader of Queen's Quest. Reach out and trying to bring Momo Watanabe back to the group. That would kind of kick off the story that would lead us to the eventual demise. This was to the disgust of Azumi, who was not at all wanting Momo Watanabe back in this group. She was not having
despite getting concussed, she remembered how she got concussed.
Yeah.
Isn't always what happens.
Yeah, she watched the video back. She was like, you know what? I will watch it. I will watch the tape because that's the type of wrestler I am. I will watch the tape. Yeah. Natsuko Tora was not happy, and it would fire back up the rivalry that we all thought was long gone and dead. And we were happy that it was long gone and dead because it completed perfectly. I would leave these two factions to face each other one more time. Inside Kamatani would be a moron and sign a contract that said, oh yeah, everyone leaves the group except for the loser. What a dumb rule. So Saya, acting as a leader, she had made the decision. I am the leader. Azumi should have beat her up after that, as is, but that's fine. So the losing
went the compassionate route.
And everyone but the final person in the match. Oedo Tai would defeat Queen's Quest in the Everyone But One Leaves match after Momo played with everyone's hearts, switching to the Queen's Quest side just to switch back. I am getting angry talking about this all over again. I've never watched... Ah, that angered me so much. I was like, this is so stupid. Like, somehow... I had many things going in my head. I was like, oh, Sai's going to turn on them, and they're just going to kill Queen's Quest as a whole, or Azumi's going to turn, you know, the usual tropes, right? Instead, they went with the trope of, oh, let's have someone turn and then turn back. Okay, sure. So it would tease Saya, and ultimately Saya would get pinned by Natsuko Tora in the end, forcing Azumi, Miyu Amasaki, Lady C, and Hina to leave Queen's Quest, leaving Saya Kamatani as the sole person left in the group as she carries the flag nonstop every single place she goes. There is a date you forgot. It was
capture the flag rules. And like as long as she holds onto the flag, the Queen's Quest faction isn't gone.
That's true. She's just teaming with Micah now instead, which has... You're really doing good at recruiting.
I mean, if you could get Micah to join you, that's a good recruitment job.
That brings us to a very important weekend, which would be, of course, July 13th and July 14th. July 13th, in a world not named Stardom, a.k.a. Marigold, at Ryugoku Sumo Hall in the Queen of Queen match. You'd see Utami Hayashishita don the Queen's Quest mask for the first time in 2 years. And, of course, she'd go one-on-one with Io Shirai, the original Queen's Quest member, in a very special singles match at Summer Destiny 2024. That is literally 10 days ago from when we were recording this. Well, it's so funny when something's that recent for a show that we do. We've never I don't think this
one, yeah.
This is the most recent we've ever had. It's like, oh yeah, this just happened. So the next day, Saya Kamatani would win the Catch the Wave tournament wearing the Queen's Quest mask because, as I like to say, she is an ex that can't forget. She can't let it go. She just can't let it go. She watches Utami. You know, first she put on the red. We should have put the day she started wearing red on here, which was also Queendom. Embarrassing. Perfect. Embarrassing. She's just missing a rose now. Which would be hilarious if she started carrying a rose. Anyways, she would wear the mask and then after she would tweet that she's the number one queen. Watanabe has not, so, you know, tough. But she said she was the number one queen. She was really dealing with it. She even said in Tokyo Sports, you know, she kind of watched it via social media and felt some kind of way revealed she talks to neither of them. Well, I didn't think she talked to Io to begin with, but she revealed also she didn't talk to Utami anymore. And I saw a lot of people get sad.
Utami's left on red.
As I said, Utami's the ex that moved, you know, Utami moved on. I'm off to the Golden Garden. You can do whatever you want. Leave me alone.
Is that the name of the host club she runs?
She's wrestling like some company that's like Koji Tomato or something, which I saw the team with like Venny, whatever. That is where Queen's Quest is now. It is not Queen's Quest anymore to me. It's one person. It's one person who carries a flag. That is not a faction. That is not a group. They'd be better off just moving on and letting it go.
Yeah, we started this faction series when they announced that it was kind of, well, it wasn't announced that the faction was dying, like one faction was going to die, but it was kind of hinted at that one group was maybe going to disappear.
Yeah.
We kind of didn't allow for loopholes.
Ironically, because
Natsuko Tora allowed for a loophole in of itself. But for all intents and purposes, the Queen's Quest story ends here because even if Saya Kamatani can rebuild it in some way, what Queen's Quest is going to look like is going to be dramatically different from any of the three iterations of Queen's Quest that we have talked about over the past month and a half. And by the time that that Queen's Quest can be rebuilt, it'll be a long time before we can talk about it and do a Queen's Quest part four or part five. So for now, the Queen's Quest story is done. We can kind of put to bed this era, and a Queen's Quest part, you know, Neo Queen's Quest is a long time off being discussed.
You can listen, if you're the listener, you could decide when the Queen's Quest ended. You decide it being the cage match last year when they had that moment on the stage and it was all over. You can say when Utami left the company. You can say when Saya Kamatani lost and everyone was kicked out. I'm choosing to say it was Queen of Queen. I think that's my best bet. It was Utami versus Io, you know, once in a lifetime type thing. They both wore the masks. Felt like a special moment that we could have. If you're a longtime Queen's Quest fan, you had that moment, right? In many ways, it was the beginning and end against each other. And I think that was a very special moment. But, you know, whatever Queen's Quest is moving forward, it's not Queen's Quest. It is Saya Kamatani's group. It is a brand new faction. You know, I'd even argue you could just say it ended when Azumi got kicked out, because that's, you know, an OG. You know, once she's gone, it's like, is this really Queen's Quest anymore? It's weird.
I do have a question for you, just quickly. Because I'm not sure if you listened to the English commentary for the Marigold show, because I know you prefer Japanese commentary. You did?
I listened to it twice for that match.
Yeah. So you heard Sonny Gutierrez mention that the two wrestlers were the best leaders of Queen's Quest.
Yeah, I did.
Do you agree with that comment? Because I know, obviously, he's got to rep the people here for the show. But I thought that was a contentious comment given, you know, obviously this past hour and 15 minutes, we haven't exactly been super complimentary for how Queen's Quest was handled by one of the leaders. So
I think they're the most impactful. Like, when you think of Momo's era, I think you think of like the four, and they did really well, like title wise and all these things. But like the moments I remember from Queen's Quest most will be the Utami moment and the Io moments. Like, best is like, it's a stretch. It comes down to like how you define best. Do I think Utami at her best is better than Momo at her best when she was leader? Probably. And then obviously EOTO. So like the, you know, it's like, it really is depend. But I don't think it's like, when I heard it, I didn't hesitate. I was like, oh yeah. Like, yeah.
Okay. I rolled my eyes because I thought, well, Utami as a leader, I don't think ultimately.
Yeah. See, I didn't think of it that way. You're thinking in kayfabe, I get it. I just thought of it as like the wrestlers themselves. That's why they said it like that. If you look at it like seven different ways, it's like, well, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. But to me, if you just, I found the funniest part of it being like, it felt like it was just ignoring the Momo part just to like a little salt in the wound for Saya instead.
That's fair. I was just curious your thoughts for that. Because then he also basically said something about the two most important wrestlers in Stardom history. And then, like, after, like, a beat with apologies to Mayu, of course. And that was when I was nearly ready to throw hands. But the leadership one I thought was relevant to...
It's the ultimate, like, whatever, you know? Your company, I'd say the same thing, you know? I do think there's at least a debate. It depends how you look at it. Depends if you're looking at the wrestler, if you're depending just the era. Like, if you look at the Queen's Quest eras, no. Right? Utami's era as leader compared. We just talked about it for three episodes. Like, Momo's era is clearly better than Utami's era. But if you're looking at it as the leaders and impact, you know, there's a debate to be there. But Io is like the layup, so it's like whatever. Yeah. And listen, there's something to be said about it, because what match did you rather see in the year 2024? It's that one by a lot, right? Like, that's the match of Queen's Quest leaders you want to see. I'm not sitting here jumping for joy for Momo versus Io again. And I'm not sitting here jumping for joy for Saya versus Io. Like, that that is the match. So in that case, I look at it as that as well. But I think ultimately, no matter how you look at Queen's Quest, all of them are so important. Like every single member that had some sort of leadership or had some sort of top spot in this faction, they had really helped form it for all the years that I was around. That includes Azmi. Azmi never got the official title, but you know, listen, she made some decisions, you know, that mattered. She made some decisions through their run. And, you know, Momo, obviously, Momo's run is very interesting because her impact is very important. She helped rebuild Stardom when Io was gone. And I think you can't let that go. And Utami is very important because she was Utami. You know, like that's just kind of how it goes. And you have one of the greatest stories told. And, you know, it's depends how you look at it. There's also a lot of faction stuff going on when Utami was leading comparatively. So neither here nor there. But ultimately, we come to the end of Queen's Quest, the history of Queen's Quest, talking about three great eras for one reason or another. You know, it'll go down as one of wrestling's true special factions. Like, if you are a Joshi fan, if you got into Stardom ever, this is the faction a lot of people connected to. It's Stardom's faction, you know, like that is the faction everyone will remember. It is not, as much as I love Stars, as much as I love, you know, past iterations of Wado Tai, not current Wado Tai, but past versions of Wado Tai. As much as people love Cosmic Angels, obviously we love DDM. Like, as many of these factions have come and gone and stick around and grow and get better and put on great matches, the top faction in Stardom from memory will always be Queen's Quest. They set the standard.
Yeah, it's funny because I've always had my complaints about Queen's Quest. You know, I've not been shy in saying I've thought it's always been a difficult faction for youngsters to really grow in, because it is a very sink or swim group, almost by design without, you know, structure at the end. Unless you can really force yourself to be one of the best, you will struggle, especially in the character department, because they're not as vibrant and outgoing, and they don't really encourage the character growth that some of the other factions do. But when you succeed in Queen's Quest, it's almost like proof of purchase. That if you can succeed in Queen's Quest, then you are almost destined for greatness, because that's, you know, as good as like it forces you to be as a wrestler, if you can stand out in that kind of faction with that kind of high-end competition, because even at its weakest points, the top three wrestlers in that group has always been, you know, at the very tippy top of Stardom's best. If you can stand out in that faction, you're destined for great things in Stardom.
Yeah.
So it's the ultimate litmus test, really, in Stardom. Yeah, succeeding Queen's Quest, you will be a top level performer. And it's just a matter of getting your opportunity, getting your chance, and, you know, forcing it. And yeah, for 7 years, Queen's Quest was at the forefront of Stardom, and they did incredible things. You know, produced multiple World of Stardom champions, multiple Wonder of Stardom champions, was, you know, frequently at the front of discussion amongst factions, whether it was for championships or just in storylines and stuff. And, you know, I mean, we talk about the cage match as being one of the most iconic and memorable moments in Stardom's history. And you only have to look back a couple of years prior, and you're talking about the elimination match that led to Tam leading Wado Tai. That was the original cage match. You know, Queen's Quest are always kind of in that spot. Whenever it's kind of Stardom is at its most dramatic, it's almost always Queen's Quest, despite the stoicism that kind of they get lumped with by people like myself. Yeah, they always manage to circle into those most dramatic moments.
Yeah, I mean, the legacy of Queen's Quest is it made main eventers. Truthfully, like, it made main eventers, it made Stars. Obviously, Io was made when the group was made, but you know, without that faction, she doesn't level up even more in some ways, you know. And obviously, you know, when Io returned to Japan after 6 years, it felt all the more special because of that Queen's Quest connection. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at Momo Watanabe and Hazuki and what they would go on to become. Mm-hmm. Momo Watanabe was a record breaker. Momo Watanabe is one of the more loved wrestlers in Stardom's history from fans. She is one of the most successful. Like, even if she never won the never wins the World of Stardom Championship, she's still one of the most successful. She had the record.
Don't say that too loudly.
I know. But you know, she's, you know, as we're recording this, she's 24 years old and has done so much, and you know, is one of the, and at one point was one of the top 10 at least wrestlers on the planet, and we know she can dial it back up whenever she feels like it. You know, and Hazuki, the same thing can be said for her. You know, she is one of the greats that haven't held either top title. Azumi can be the same. Azumi's just breaking out now in some way, despite having countless matches through this group and as a member of this group that people remember. And then, of course, you know, you have Saya Kawatani, who currently flies the flag of Queen's Quest and has had the record-breaking reign, and you know, was in Wrestler of the Year conversations when Stardom was at its hottest. You know, that should be said. And then of course, as Utami, while she wasn't leader when she first won the World of Stardom title, she was at the forefront when this company went into a different stratosphere, and she was one half of the reasons why. I think that's, you know, when you hear the leader of Queen's Quest conversation, some people may just look at that and think that was part of it. And if you do, then it's like, it's almost not even a competition because of like how big Stardom got because of her matches with Shuri and that title reign and what she was able to do. You know, we talked about it during the Momo era of this, and we talked about it with Utami as World of Stardom champion. You can listen to all these episodes. We've talked about Utami a lot recently, but she got put in a tough situation from the start and got better and better and better. And when she got that World of Stardom championship, it was in a time of need for her to become a star. Not only did she become a star, she became the top wrestler of the promotion. She had unbelievable matches, some of the most legendary matches in Stardom history. You know, we talk about the Shuri match, we talk about the cage match. Those two are, you know, if you were to make a top 10 of Stardom matches of all time, I'm pretty sure those are comfortably landing in there. And you know, for a lot of people, it's probably top five. You know, like top 10, I'm trying to be generous, it's probably top five. That's just what Utami did. You know, Utami helped, you know, carried on what I feel like Utami in many ways carried on the EO feel of it. You know, Momo carried on as a leader and carried Queen's Quest and helped build it up, but Utami did bring that EO feel to it. If that, you know, I don't like to compare people to EO because that's a white sort of generation wrestler. But Utami in many ways is her own version of a once in a generation wrestler. You know, I sit here and say Momo's 24. Okay, Utami's 25. Like, you know, like it's unfair sometimes. It's unfair sometimes, but that's what Queen's Quest created. They created so many super wrestlers that are really carrying the world of wrestling today, whether it be in the biggest promotion in the world at WrestleMania this year, or it's in Marigold as the ace, or it's in Stardom right now as one of the young stars, like Azumi. Saya Kawatani is one of the top stars. Queen's Quest is, you listen, if Queen's Quest stopped running right now officially, like the name just went away, they accomplished their goal. You know, that's what EO's goal was long ago. It accomplished the goal. You set up wrestling, not just Stardom. Wrestling for years to come, and what a legacy it's been.
Most factions don't last 7 years. Yeah, you know, when you look at most, yeah, you know, especially coming from a Western standpoint, factions come in, they kind of serve their purpose, and then they bugger off. Yep. You know, Queen's Quest gone for 7 years. That's most times they'd be like, yeah, okay, on you go, right. Let's move on. But like, they've gone through three different definitive leaders, and then maybe a fourth to kind of, you know, bring it to its logical conclusion, and maybe it's a logical continuation. But it's the fact that it's been able to survive so long and evolve and change through these different circumstances and eras of Stardom and keep finding a purpose to continue and lifting up different generations of wrestlers. And, you know, you listed all these big names, and then there's people like Konami, B. Priestley, who has also gone on to different levels of success and prepared other wrestlers that were, you know, people like Miyu Yamasaki and even Lady C and Hina and stuff like that, who, you know, maybe aren't at the ready for the top levels, but like they are serving important roles in Stardom and, you know, the next step forward. Who knows? Because like Azuki and Konami didn't do amazing things in Queen's Quest necessarily, but their next step forward in, you know, Tokyo Cyber Squad and Noeto was what really unlocked them. You know,
yeah.
Miyu Yamasaki and this new faction, Lady C and God's Eye, maybe that's just what they need, and the groundwork that was laid under them with Queen's Quest might be exactly what was needed to prepare them for that next step forward.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the thing with Miyu Yamasaki. It's only the beginning for her. We don't know where she's going to go, but there's a reason she was put with Utami and Saya and Azumi, right?
Yeah.
As a, you know, on day one, they see something, you know, Rossi saw something in her. They clearly still see something in her. They're putting her among this faction that is kind of all these young superstars now. You know, Queen's Quest, it part of me, you know, since it started all the way back in 2016, has carried on. I mean, it's accomplished everything and more. You've had great tag teams, you've had great trios, you've had great singles champions. Like you said, factions aren't supposed to last this long. They just happened to not only last long, but always be important one way or the other. Sure, there's some down years in there, but in the end, they always kind of swoop back in and remind you why they're the best. Their down years in the Utami era had two of them as the top record-breaking champions. It's like,
yeah,
it was really a down year. Not necessarily. Like, Queen's Quest is a very special faction that will go down as Stardom's greatest faction. And that's the truth. That is just the truth. Just
remember, for everything they did, nearly a year into their run, they were rookie Azumi and Hazuki. And that was it, because Momo was injured and Io Shirai was needing to take a break. That group could have nearly been done and dusted before they even really got going. And they kept at it, and look at everything they did since that point. You go back to listen to episode one, where they're at with everything, and look at everything they accomplished since.
It's pretty incredible. But that is it for the Queen's, the history of Queen's Quest here on the Stardom Road podcast. Trent, before we go, do you have anything to plug? Do you have, or just, you know, hit us with your plugs?
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter/X at OneUpCulture. I'm on a bit of a social media hiatus at the moment, so you'll see there's not a lot of action on there at the moment. Currently working on the 5-star Grand Prix preview, trying to do my thing for that. I think I mentioned that last time as well, but there's a lot going on there, and yeah, at this point, Stardom still hasn't revealed their whole deck of cards yet. It's kind of difficult to do everything when, like, there could be different champions, so I can't do graphics for all of that, and I can't talk about certain things because that could change between now and then, and of course not all of the people involved have been announced yet. So like, that should be out next week, which means the final 2-3 days between all of that stuff that should be just determined, and the piece going out, I'll probably be going crazy prepping everything. So get a look at this face. This is probably as sane as I'm ever going to look for the next month, because then, of course, the 5-star Grand Prix will be happening, and I'll probably be trying to keep up with that as best as I can.
Yeah, lots going on. That reminds me, I got to get stuff too. Future Joshi will come out eventually. I kind of took a stopgap last week. When I said no wrestling, I meant no wrestling. I didn't even think of
anything. The future of Joshi will be in the future.
It will be. It will be. I got a lot. I think I have almost all the responses back, if not all of them, which is great.
Nice.
I just got to put it together now, which is should be easy, but, you know, just got to do it. I even have the graphics for it already. Like, I got everything done. I just got to do it. So hopefully that'll be out, I'd say probably first week in August. Be safe. But yeah, that's something to look forward to. It is 5-star season. I'll be covering that over on the 5-star Joe show. If you want to hear a weekly show about it, I will do a live preview of some sort soon. Can't tell you when, because I don't know when we got X and double X. Same problem that Trent's talking about. I also plan to write my usual preview. That's kind of, like I said last time, me and Trent write very different previews. Gives you a little bit of something on each. I hope to write that, but again, don't know what the blocks are. Don't know how. Haven't fully thought of it yet, because I realize it's close. I do. I promise. But until it's full, like until the blocks are full, my mind's like, yeah, I can wait. I can wait. But yeah, that's it from both of us. Check out all the podcasts right here on the Count Out Podcast Network. If you want to listen to a New Japan podcast, All Japan podcast, or everything going on wrestling podcast, we got you all covered right here on the Count Out Podcast Network. We'll be back next time. But until then, see ya.
This has been a Count Out Podcast.
CountOut provides a wide variety of bonus content that is right at your fingertips. On the CountOut Patreon, our podcasts are creating bonus content exclusively for you, their listener. For only $5 a month, you can watch instant reactions to major shows, watch-alongs, early access to main feed podcasts, some fun goof and gag audio, plus shows from some of the podcasters' outside interests. It's the best way to experience all that the CountOut Network has to offer. So head on down to patreon.com/countout to take part in some of the best and most fun content wrestling has to offer. Again, that is patreon.com/countout.